Okay. All good? All right. Good morning, everyone. So, this lesson I had kind of started preparing several weeks ago. The circumstances changed on me teaching it now, but it's kind of funny because I had started preparing it, and I don't know how the ideas for a lesson come, but they come from somewhere, you know, maybe there's a God. And I had all these points laid out, and then, you know, that accident happened, and turns out that the points are still even more relevant than when I had initially prepared them. So I didn't change a single point from what I had originally prepared, I had fleshed them out. So, yeah. So that was just a little background on how this came about. So, God's provision is what I want to talk about this morning. So to start, I want to define the term because I think a lot of issues arise from just not having terms defined properly. So provision is the action of providing or supplying something for use. So in our case, God's provision would be God is the one supplying something for our use, especially in, you know, difficult times or hard times or whatever we might be going through. So we know that God provides. You know, we all have personal examples of God providing. There's plenty of examples in the Bible of God providing for his people. I'm going to look at a couple passages of that, but you know, again, as preparing this, it kind of like sometimes it goes one way and then another way, and some different points came out in my mind that I wanted to talk about other than just, you know, listing out ways that God provides for us, because that was kind of my first idea, but then it changed to different points that kind of came to my mind. So, so we'll go through some passage here and then see how God provides and then talk about some other points. So, the first passage we can turn to is 1 Kings 17. I should have had you turn there from the beginning, but, you know. So this is the maybe what everyone thought of when you think of God providing. It's the widow of Zarephath. I'll read this. We're going to read 8 to 16 and then talk about it. So, then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and stay there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to provide food for you." So he arose and went to Zarephath, and when he came to the entrance of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, "Please get me a little water in a cup so that I may drink." As she was going to get it, he called to her and said, "Please bring me a piece of bread in your hand." But she said, "As the Lord your God lives, I have no food, only a handful of flour in the bowl and a little oil in the jar. And behold, I am gathering a few sticks so that I may go in and prepare it for me and my son so that we may eat it and die." However, Elijah said to her, "Do not fear. Go, do as you have said. Just make me a little bread loaf from it first and bring it out to me. And afterward, you may make one for yourself and for your son. For this is what the Lord your God, the God of Israel, says: The bowl of flour shall not be used up, nor shall the jar of oil become empty until the day of the Lord provides, the day that the Lord provides rain on the face of the earth." So he went and did everything in accordance with the word of Elijah, and she and he and her household ate for many days. The bowl of flour was not used up, nor did the jar of oil become empty, in accordance with the word of the Lord, which he spoke through Elijah. So this is a great story, just a classic example of God providing. I mean, you got a couple different angles of it: the widow providing for Elijah, and then Elijah or God providing for the widow. So we have this hopeless situation where she's getting ready to die, and Elijah comes along, sure enough, provides for her through God in a way that, you know, she did not certainly did not expect. So there's the lesson. We're all done. We can go home. No. While that's true, and that is the lesson, is that God will provide, there's some other points that we can make on this. So I'm not going to make I'm not going to say anything else on this story at this point, but I will be referencing it as I go through some of these points. So so just keep that story in your mind, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. So the first point is, we won't be tempted beyond what we can handle. God will provide the way out. And for this, the verse I want to look at is 1 Corinthians 10:13 on the board. No temptation has overcome you except something that is something common to mankind. And God is faithful, so he will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation, he will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. So that word, I believe, in the original language, that word tempted is the same word. It's kind of the connotation is more of like tested or like trial or something like that, from what I can understand about the word. So kind of a better, you know, I think a better way of understanding what he's saying here is more of like testing or trial that he might be going through. So what this verse says is that God will not allow us to be tempted, tested, beyond what we are able to endure. So to me, that brings up the question in my mind is the question of why. Why will he not give us a test or a temptation that we can't, that we are able to handle? The answer is in the very next part of the verse. And it says, because with that test or with that temptation, God will provide the way of escape. So I think like maybe the main thing that stands out to me is we don't escape this test or this temptation or this whatever we're in because of our ability and how strong we are and how, you know, great we are at dealing with things. It's only because of God and only because of his mercy and only because he provides us the way out that thing is not outside our ability to endure it. So it's not based on our ability that he's like giving us something that's within our ability to handle. The ability to handle it is because he gives us the way out. So, you know, it just kind of takes takes it off us that our ability and puts it on God and his ability to provide. Another point kind of relating to that is that we don't even know what we're able to endure. Like we might think we have these certain limitations and this is what we can handle, but God knows more than us and he knows us better than we know ourselves. So if we're basing things on what we think we can handle, we would not, you know, it would be a much different set of things that we can handle than God can would know that we can handle and that he would help us to handle. An example comes to my mind like a survival type story. I don't know if you guys are interested in these survival type stories, but if you've heard the story, the 127 hours story about Aaron Ralston, who he got his arm caught when he was hiking in Utah. He got his arm caught between a rock and the wall of this, you know, cavern, and he was stuck there with his arm trapped on the wall for 127 hours. And he got to the point where he was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm just gonna die. So he made a video. He had video or camera with him or something, and he made a video. Where he basically said goodbye to everyone. He just was like, I'm dying out here. And then he fell asleep after that. And when he was sleeping, he had this dream where he had a wife and kid and a son, I think it was. And when he woke up, it was like renewed purpose. He was like, I can get through this. I have to get through this. And so if you know the story, he ends up cutting off his own arm to get out of the situation. Now, I'm not saying, like, I mean, you know, I don't know that he said, like, God gave this to him, but, you know, I would say that. But it illustrates the point that we don't know our own limitations. He was like, I am at the end. I cannot, there's nothing else I can do. I'm going to just die. And then through this new, you know, dream that he had, or through, it allowed him to access something that he didn't even know he had. So, maybe in his case, it was God's provision showing him that, you know, he can survive this. And he did survive, and he's, you know, still alive. So going back to the widow's story, the widow of Zarephath, that illustrates the point also that, you know, even if it takes a miracle, whatever it takes, God will provide for according to his will. So he will provide, even if it takes a miracle. All right, which brings us then to the next point, is kind of relating to that point. We can't endure without God's provision. I said, relating to the last point up here, is that we don't escape the issue or the difficult situation that we're in because of our own strength. We escape it because God gives us the way out. He gives us the way of escape to that difficult situation that we're in. So, yeah, we like to think of ourselves as being strong, we're being capable, you know, we can conquer this situation, but we need to take a step back and realize that we can't accomplish anything without God. Without his provision of life, moment by moment, without him giving us the ability to be alive, every breath we take and every moment we're alive is only because God has provided us that ability to be alive. So when you're being in a situation, a difficult situation, sometimes you get to the point where you're like, I don't know if I can do this. You can't. You can't do it. Whatever the situation might be, you can't do it on your own. We need to step back, focus on God, and realize that he is the one that will allow us to get through it. We can't do it on our own. And to the opposite point of that, if you think, you know, I can do this. No, you can't. You can only do it because God has given you the ability. So anything that you can do is only because God. So you can't do it. God can do it. A couple points to illustrate this. John 15:5, I am the vine, you are the branches. The one who remains in me, I in him, bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Not that we are adequate in ourselves, that's 2 Corinthians 3:5, not that we are adequate in ourselves so as to consider anything as having come from ourselves, but our adequacy is from God. And John 3:27, John replied, a person can receive not even one thing unless it has been given him from heaven. So again, all those verses to say we can't endure without God's provision. So we need to stop trying to focus on our own ability and what is within our own framework of what we can do, and step back and realize God has provided us, whether he has provided us or he will provide us with the way that we can get through whatever we're in. When we get to the point of thinking, you know, how am I going to get through this? How can I do this? I can't do that. I can't do this. You know, you're right. You can't do it. So stop focusing on yourself and what you can do, and start focusing on God and what he can do through you. So, yeah, taking us out of the way, back, and stop thinking about our own limitations and thinking about what God can do through us. So next point. Number 3, provision may be different than we think. So for this, I'm going to have you turn to 1 Corinthians 12. We're going to start in verse 7. read this. 1 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 7. Because of the extraordinary greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might leave me, and he has said to me, My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I delight in weakness, in insults, in distresses, in persecutions, in difficulties, in behalf of Christ, for when I am weak, then I am strong. So, you all have heard this passage. This is the classic thorn in the flesh passage from Paul. And this is, I think, a perfect example of this point. Paul has this thorn in the flesh, whatever that actually was, and he asked God three different times to take it away from him. He says, please take this away. And instead of taking it away, God said, my provision for you is my grace. My grace is sufficient for you. So this kind of illustrates the point that even though God will provide for us, you know, that provision might be different than we actually think it might be. I mean, I don't know that Paul, when he was praying and asking for it to be taken away, that he was thinking that God's grace would be what would be provided for that situation as he was praying for it to be removed. So this, you know, comes back to the point that also God's provision, it may not be to take something away. It might be to help us endure, as in Paul's case, because this thing, you know, whatever you're going through, it might be what's necessary for you or for someone else. So while God will always provide, it may not be in the way that we think is best or that we want it to be. So when we're going through something, we can't assume the way that God will provide and then, you know, get annoyed at him when he's not providing in the way that we would have expected him to. God knows more than us. I don't know if you knew that. God knows more than us. So while the provision might not look like we want it to look or we expect it to look, we need to, again, step back from ourselves and realize that his purposes and his, you know, plan is better than ours. So, stop focusing on us. Start focusing on God and what his plan might be. His plan might not be for immediate deliverance from the situation. In Paul's case, his plan for Paul wasn't to have him remove this thorn from him. It was to endure it so that whatever the ultimate goal was, stop him from exalting himself or, you know, whatever other goals came out of this or whatever results came out of this, this is his purpose instead of this, you know, just taking it away. So again, we can think back to the widow. In her case, she was, you know, getting ready to the point of just dying. So she had to be in this struggle for quite some time of, like, knowing that you're running out and, like, what are we going to do? And rather than, you know, God providing the way of escape at any point of the struggle, you know, she was allowed to go through this, and she was, in order to get to this point where Elijah could come along and give her the provision from God, and that was God's plan, that was his goal, was to get to that point so that, you know, I mean, I think is also to, part of it was to teach us the lesson so that we could have this story to hear and learn from, but also just to illustrate to Elijah, illustrate to the widow, the fact that God will provide no matter what. So, and that brings us then, so the last point, kind of summarizing, although the provision may not be what we expect, it is exactly what we need, and it's always enough. So that provision, no matter what it is, even though it's not what we might think, it's always enough for what we need or for God to accomplish his will and his plan. Next point number four, difficult times can be necessary to trust in God's provision. Again, looking back at Paul's thorn in the flesh passage, he says, power is perfected in weakness. This illustrates the point that God's power is most evident, most profound when we are weak. And sometimes we need the difficult times to break us down to get us to the point of weakness so that we can trust in his provision. So sometimes we get into our heads that we can get through this. You know, like I said earlier, we can, you know, I can, you know, figure this out. I can do this. I can make it through this. But that is often followed by God forcing us, whether one way or to another, to realize that we can't do it. And we need to realize that. We need to realize that we can't do it. So, because of our arrogance, we kind of, we often need something hard, something difficult to get us to break out of that arrogance that we have to be able to trust in God's provision. I mean, when things are going good, we often aren't as conscious of the fact that God is providing for us at every second of our lives. And unfortunately, you know, we have to be reminded that we aren't in control. We don't like it when things go wrong. And we might ask God, why are you doing this? Power is perfected in weakness. So we need to be weak for God to be glorified, for God to be magnified, because in our weakness is when he is strongest and when he is most powerful. So in order to glorify him fully, we need to be weak and we need to admit that he is the only reason that we're able to do anything. A point to illustrate this, Romans 5, 3-5 on the screen. And not only this, but we also celebrate in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance proven character, and proven character hope. And hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. Again, Paul here illustrates the point that we should be celebrating our tribulations, because in them, you know, all these good things come. So God knows what we might need. You know, in this case, Paul says the hope is what we're getting to. Hope is that end goal. And God knows what we need to reach that point of hope, as Paul illustrates here. And often to have hope and trust in God, we need to go through these things. We need to go through these tribulations to build the perseverance and the proving character and to get to the ultimate point of hope. God knows things, and we need to change our perspective to him and his purpose and his plan to lead us to the point of, in this case, hope or whatever that end goal might be. He can provide us. There's a totally different thing, him just providing the way out and us actually being able to use that provision and being able to trust in that provision. So he might put something for us to use, but if we're not prepared to use it, we don't trust him enough, or we don't trust this thing that he's provided enough, then it's, what good is it? We're not going to be able to use it. And, you know, these difficult times might be what causes you, what forces you to be in the position to be able to trust that provision that he's providing. Because without that, you know, who knows if we're going to even be able to recognize it as God's provision. So, again, looking back at the widow, she was to the point where she had no option but to trust this guy. I mean, who knows if Elijah was there a little bit earlier when she had a little bit more food and she may have had the idea, maybe I can get through this, you know, maybe I don't need, you know, Elijah, maybe I'll just send him on his way and not give him what he needed. She would have not accepted it at that time, or maybe she wouldn't have realized her need for it. But getting to the point where she's ready to die, and her son get ready to die. It's to the point, like, I have no other option but to give this, to trust in this provision and this guy that has come along. So, you know, so ultimately the point is, these difficult times might be necessary for us to actually trust and have faith in God and His provision for our lives. Yeah. Point number five is, we can be the instrument of God's provision. For this, I want to look at Esther 4. We seem to have been talking about Esther quite a lot, it seems like. Rich taught on it a couple months ago. And this point actually was kind of in my mind back then, but, you know, applies very much here. So I'll read the verse. Then Mordecai, just to set up, we probably all know the story, but, you know, Esther was, you know, queen, and when the king made a, you know, order based on bad counsel to basically wipe out the Jews, and Esther's in this position where Mordecai's telling her, you should go and talk to him and get him to change his mind. This is the verse. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, liberation and rescue will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this?" I think there's several different points that we can make here, and several different angles we can kind of look at this passage from. And one is that God is going to provide for His people, you know. And I think Mordecai's attitude is a good, you know, evidence of that. When we think about Mordecai and how he's reacting to this situation, how he's talking to Esther, we don't hear him saying, like, "Oh, I wonder if God's going to come through for us," you know, and like being worried about it. And on the flip side, he's also not wondering, like, "Oh, if Esther doesn't do this, or maybe we won't, maybe everyone will be wiped out, maybe we won't be saved," you know, all this. He's not thinking that. His attitude is, this is going to happen. We're going to be delivered from this situation. His exact words are, I mean, if you keep silent, liberation and rescue will arise for the Jews from another place. So he's saying to her, like, you know, if you don't do this, it's gonna be figured out. God's gonna provide, but you need to be a part of it. You should be a part of it. And I think that's something that we can take directly to our own lives. We should have that confidence that whatever we're in, wherever we're struggling with, whatever problems we might have, that God is going to provide for us. Now, again, it might not be the way we look, might not be what we want it to be, might be His grace, might be the provision, but He's going to provide, and we need to have that confidence in Him providing for us. So another point, probably the main point, is the question, will you be a part of God's provision? Will we be a part of God's provision? We just said that we should have confidence that this provision will come. So are you going to be a part of it and have the opportunity to be a blessing, get a blessing for yourself and be a blessing for yourself as well as others, or are you going to miss out on the blessing and perish, as the passage says in that case? So to me, this idea is a mixture of, like, freeing. I think I even said this to Rich after he taught it a few months or whatever, whenever that was. It's almost like a mixture of freeing and convicting of this idea, because it's freeing in the way that, you know, it's not on you to accomplish something. It's not necessarily on you to accomplish something. So you feel like, if I don't, you know, give this person the gospel, they're not going to be saved. Well, that's not exactly how God works. Like, if He wants that person to be saved, it's going to come from somewhere else. So you don't have to feel the pressure of, I have to do this every, you know, and if I miss out, this person won't be saved. But at the same time, it's also convicting because you might have been put in that situation to talk to that person, to give them the gospel. So while you won't be the sole reason they're not saved, you could have the opportunity, or you won't be the sole reason they are saved. You might be in that position to give them the gospel, and that would be an opportunity that you would want to take, you know, and then get the blessing also for yourself and also and for that person because of, you know, yeah. So mixture, odd mixture to me of, you know, freeing and convicting at the same time. So another point, which is in the last part of this verse, is in this passage, is we might be put in a situation specifically to be God's provision for someone else. So again, God puts, wherever we're at, God has put us there, and we're where he wants us to be. So if we're in a specific situation, sometimes, you know, we like to think we earned our way to where we are. You know, Esther could have thought she earned her way there with whatever her beauty or whatever. But ultimately, God is the reason that we are where we are, and there's probably a specific purpose and for being where we are. So we should, again, have that in our mind, think of that, and consider our position at any given time and what the reason might be that we're there and why, and what, how we can be God's provision to someone else or to ourselves even as well. So, and then also, like in Esther's case, she's in a good position. She's a queen. Like, that's great. But the position that we're put in might be a bad position. You know, it might not be a great position. But whatever position we're in, God has put us there for a reason. And we need to keep that in our mind. And what is the reason that I'm in this situation? And can I be the provision that God is providing to whoever, to ourselves or to someone else? So another passage on this, which is, you know, a very interesting to me, is in Luke 23, the story of Jesus and the carrying the cross. And when they led him away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, as he was coming from the country, and placed on him the cross to carry behind Jesus. So stay with me. This is a really interesting point to me, and it's really cool to me, because in this case, the person that is getting God's provision is Jesus. You know, Jesus, who is God, is getting the provision from God to complete this task. And again, I think this is like interesting to look at it from a couple different angles. So the one angle to look at it is from Simon's perspective. I'm assuming he wasn't too thrilled about this job, considering he was seized by, the Romans to carry this cross behind this criminal. I mean, I don't know if he knew Jesus or whatever, but he's assigned to do this, and he's forced to do this. So, but even despite the fact that he probably wasn't that thrilled about this, he still was used by God to provide for Jesus. So the point being that God doesn't need willing participants to provide for you, or he doesn't necessarily need you to be willing to use you to provide for someone else. God is, you know, sovereign over everything, so he doesn't need our participation to be able to use us to provide, and he doesn't need other people's participation, you know, willingness to be able to provide for you. So, again, God's in control, and he can provide for us, however. So, another point is, this guy happens to be in the right place at the right time, or maybe the wrong place at the wrong time, depending on how he would view it. But he ends up being in this spot to be able to help Jesus. I mean, what a blessing this guy ended up with, being able to assist to help Jesus carry his cross. I mean, you know, this is, I mean, the blessing that this guy got without being willing to do it. And I'm, you know, it's just a, you know, looking back, he would, who knows if he learned about Jesus or whatever, and but you can imagine at the time he probably didn't like it, but looking back, if he did know about Jesus, then later, if he didn't know about him, then it's like, wow, what a opportunity I got without even realizing it. That's a little bit of outside the what the passage says, but you know, it could be. I'm just imagining what might have taken place in his mind going beyond after this situation. So then the other perspective to look at this passage from is from kind of Jesus's side, and the fact that Jesus is the one that God is providing for. So Jesus is God, and he's in the process of completing the most important event in history. So this is going to be accomplished, right? There's no way this won't be accomplished. This is the pinnacle of all of history, is this event taking place. So the fact that God chose this random guy to come on and to help Jesus complete this task is like, that's mind-blowing to me. And like the reason why he chose this guy to help Jesus is wild, I think. I mean, I don't know exactly why. I would say, you know, it could be to magnify Jesus's suffering and the suffering he was going to, that this would also magnify his humanity and show how Jesus is fully human because of how much he was beat down, and he may have, you know, just to emphasize his humanity in this situation. But I think another possible explanation is to show us that God provides and he uses weak people like us, or unwilling people, to accomplish his purpose. I mean, the fact that God would use a person, a man, from the crowd to help Jesus accomplish the most important task in history, I mean, that tells me, like, what won't he use people for? He will use us for whatever he needs to accomplish. So, yeah, that just, you know, sticks in my mind, is that if God is going to be willing, is going to use a man to accomplish this, what won't he do? And that, I think it tells me that not only can he use us to accomplish his task, but he prefers to. He wants to use us. He doesn't want to force anything, you know, to someone. So, you know, whatever, some people you hear from atheists, like, why didn't God just make it so obvious that people believe, put a glowing cross in the sky so that everyone knows? So, well, I mean, maybe this is the reason. He wants to use people. He wants to use us to accomplish his task. He wants to use us to get people to believe. He doesn't want to just make everyone believe by making it, you know, making something like that to force everyone to believe. But he wants to give us the opportunity, and he prefers to use us to do that. So, overall, I would say the point here is God will provide, and he will use people to do so. The only question is, are we going to be a part of it, or are we going to let the opportunity pass and, you know, let someone else get the opportunity to be God's provision? So we need to be ready for the opportunities to be a blessing both to ourselves by being God's provision, and to others, whoever ends up being the one that gets provided for through God, well, by God through us. So last point, number 6, if we follow God's plan, he will provide for us at the correct time. And this one, verse to illustrate this is Romans 8:28. Which we all know, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. So like it says right there in the verse, God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God. And I think the key point there is to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And I think this is exactly the point. If we love God and we follow his path, we can know that he will provide for us, and he will cause everything to work together for good. But we need to be following his plan. We need to be on the path that he wants for us. And we need to love God, and we need to be following his purpose in order to fully gain the benefits of the being that provision, and or, you know, gaining that provision. So, yeah, if we're not on that path, we might either not recognize, not be able to get to attain the full, you know, his full plan or his full promise that he has for us. So one interesting thought that occurred to me thinking about that point is, you know, if we're following his path, then we should know that our immediate deliverance, our immediate happiness, or our immediate comfort might not be the best thing. So we should understand that we might need to remain in a situation or an issue in order to result in the most good. And it might not be for us, but if we're following his path, we should recognize that. So then what we want is in line with what he wants. You know, so if our will is aligned with his will, then we want the outcome, even if it means not necessarily, even if the provision isn't what we envision it to be or we want it to be. But when we're not aligned with his will, then we are probably more expecting a certain outcome or a certain personal result, which may not be the best thing that God has planned for us or for whoever else it is. So basically the point is just, if our will is aligned with his, it's going to be good no matter what, and it would be good for us no matter what the outcome. And if it's not, then we should change our attitude. So another verse on this, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for prosperity and not for disaster, to give you a future and hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you, and you will seek me and you will find me when you search for me with all your heart. Now, as we should be aware, this, you know, the passage is meant for a specific group at a specific time, but, you know, the idea is still there that God has plans for us. And in this case, the plan for them was that they will find him when they search for him with all their heart. So they need to be doing the right thing, and they need to be on the right path in order to be able to get the full blessing from God, because in their case, he's telling him that these are the plans that he has for them. The plans that he has for them is prosperity, not disaster, giving them a future, giving them a hope. So you think that they would be like, oh, these are all great things. We should be, you know, gung-ho and fully willing to follow this plan that God has for us. But you know, we know from the Old Testament that that's not exactly how it goes. And we know for ourselves, we should have that same attitude. You know, God tells us in that Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for those who love God and for those who are called according to his purpose. So we should have the same attitude. We should be thrilled to be following his plan and to be going forward and to be doing what he has for us, the plans that he has for us. But, you know, like those in the Old Testament, we are very reluctant to do so. And the last verse that I have on here is actually cut off. Different versions of PowerPoint, I guess. But the verse is Proverbs 3:5-6, and that is, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. So again, you know, it seems so simple. Just in all your ways acknowledge him, follow his plan and his path, and he will make your path straight. But, you know, we don't seem to always follow that path. So that's my last point. So just in conclusion, we saw the ways, you know, some points on God's provision. We saw that God will provide for his people. We explored some points on this. The points were we won't be tempted beyond what we can handle. God will provide the way out. We can't endure without God's provision. Provision may be different than we think, but it's always enough. God, our hard times can be necessary to trust in God's provision. We can be the instrument of God's provision, and if we follow God's path, he will provide for us, and it's in the way that he sees fit, and it's always at the correct time. So I think, to me, the points here that stood out, especially given the situation we're in, is the point that we can't endure without God's provision. You know, we can't do it on our own. No matter what we're going through, we can't endure. We need to fall back on God and lean on him and his plan and the Spirit guiding us to be able to accomplish whatever we need to. And then the other point that stands out to me is that we can be the instrument of God's provision. So with the situation that we're in, everyone needs to be part of the provision for everyone else. So we all need to be stepping up and filling in spots that we can be the provision for the rest of us here and ourselves, because like we talked about with the passages, you know, being a provision for someone else, you ultimately become a provision for yourself. I don't know anyone that has taught before in some aspect. For me, I always learn the most when I teach something, in this case, in here or wherever it ends up being. So in, you know, being a provision for someone else, you can ultimately be a blessing for yourself and provide for yourself. So when we let God use us, we end up with a blessing for us, being a blessing for ourselves as much as other people. So, so going back to, you know, people needing to teach, I would say everyone start preparing something. I mean, you got a month, whoever is going to teach after, you know, Rich does the next two and then I do the next one, whoever's going to teach, you got a month, and then we go on from there. So be the provision that God has for everyone else. That's all I have. So we'll close in prayer. Father, thank you for the opportunity to study your word this morning. Thank you for your provision in our lives. Thank you for the opportunity to be your provision for other people. And please help us to recognize and trust in you going forward in our lives, and recognize the positions that you put us in to be a provision for ourselves or for other people. And please watch over us as we leave, and please help everyone to keep what we've talked about today in our minds to be able to ultimately glorify you. And in Jesus' name, amen.